Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and once again, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Andrew Batista and Kevin Fernandez. Andrew, how you doing, sir?
Very good, man. A bit, you know, down in the dumps because of the results, but yeah.
Could be worse. Kevin, how are you? Been a busy week for you. You went off to Italy, of course, and now back.
Yeah, what Andrew said, that sums it up, honestly.
Well, I will say, to give the listeners a glimpse behind the curtain, I think this was the first week I had to politely remind my co-hosts of their contractual obligations. You can't just not turn up to a recording if your team doesn't get the result they want. It's not how it works. But no, of course, I'm joking. But
I almost got my lawyer on the phone. Read the contract.
Employment tribunal.
I'm like, get out of this. Yeah.
Absolutely. But of course, as we're alluding to, two massive games this weekend, which I'm sure everybody is aware of. We're going to go through those in good detail and then run you through some of the other results from around the league, as always. But let's start, gents, with, I think, definitely the biggest game of the weekend, arguably the biggest game of this Primeira Liga season, or any Primeira Liga season, of course, the Clásico between Porto and Benfica. And whilst it wasn't a classic in terms of the scoreline, with the game ending 0-0, it was nonetheless a game of great intrigue. Of course, Jose Mourinho returning to the Dragão for the first time. Porto definitely had the bigger chances of the game, the biggest arguably coming in stoppage time. With that was Rodrigo Moura a chance that hit the crossbar in the dying seconds, but in the end it was a point shared, possibly a result that benefited Benfica slightly more, but we'll dig into all of that in due course. Andrew, I'll bring you in here as the Portista, just for your reflections on the game itself.
I'd say a disappointing game, not just from a Porto perspective, but I think just from you know, fans of the league. You want the sort of big game to be entertaining and to be free-flowing. It didn't feel that way. It did look like Benfica were very much there to draw. I think they were playing for the draw from the beginning of the game. There was one team that wanted to win, one team that just didn't want to lose. But also saying that, even though Porto did create chances, we weren't very clinical, very, very little in terms of shot generation on target. Benfica did make it difficult, and then they did what most teams that have done well against Porto this season did. They sort of flooded the midfield and they made it very difficult to apply that press and that high intensity. And Alan Varela was very well neutralized in this game. He wasn't able to contribute at all offensively. And that's a credit to Benfica. He was largely anonymous. I think Gabri Veiga struggled. Samu struggled as well in this game. He was having to get involved in build up a lot more, and he can do that, but it's not his strength. It's not really what you want him to do. And you want the chances to kind of get to the box for him and he finish. A couple issues, I think. I mean, I don't think Francesco Farioli did a lot wrong. I probably say he should have brought Rodrigo Moura on a bit earlier. It was very clear from about the 70th minute that an individual was going to be the difference maker. And, you know, William Gomes, he's an individual, a guy that can sort of make something out of nothing. Bringing Rodrigo Moura on in the 89th minute, just, I mean, it felt weird. And then obviously he had that huge chance. And maybe if he was warmed up, or if he'd been on the pitch a bit longer, maybe that, you know, that ends differently. Dennis Gould came on to good effect. He was able to join in the attacks a lot better. He is better at that. So that was a good sort of use of Dennis Gould, and I think that's something you'll see in the games where we are struggling and where the midfield is a bit congested in that way. But overall, you look at it and think, yes, it is 2 points dropped. It sucks that it had to be against Mourinho, you know, in the dugout at the Dragão, to sort of lose the winning streak like that. It is a shame, but there probably wasn't much more the team could do. They were doing what they always do. Maybe Farioli could have made some adjustments, some better adjustments, in-game adjustments, to try and work around what, you know, the setup that Benfica had in place. There's probably a question about Borja Sainz. Does he stay in the starting 11? I think week after week, we're seeing him struggle. He's getting in the right positions, but he's just not contributing. He's not putting the ball away. He's not contributing with assists. So maybe it's time for Rodrigo Moura to step in. To maybe help with that situation. So yeah, disappointing from Benfica's perspective. This is a big result for them. They were struggling. Mourinho will be the most happy with this result, and this is kind of what they set out to do. Looking at the way Benfica was set up, having Alzhenitsyn where he had Alzhenitsyn was to be sort of annoying in that space and to overload the midfield. I don't think Alzhenitsyn has had a good game for about 3 weeks now. He looks really out of form and probably needs some confidence building. Richard Rios is pretty good. Sudakov, he looked like he was really trying to find a solution in the attack. Luka Bakio again had a good game. And it was very clear that Mourinho was happy with the point when he took off Luka Bakio and brought on Barreiro later on, and you knew that was it really. Overall, kind of a disappointing game from a neutral's perspective. Certainly from a Porto perspective, big result for Benfica, who I'd say definitely needed the points.
And for anybody, I mean, I'm sure everyone listening is very engaged with the games and the results, and most people probably watch the game live. But I guess for anybody listening who perhaps didn't see the game and might assume that those kind of comments about Benfica playing for the draw might be maybe a little bit harsh or not accurate, I think nowhere was it more summed up in Mourinho's post-match interview where he couldn't almost hide his glee, and there was that quote of "We're here, we're still alive," which I think kind of summed up how he felt about it. This game for them was really about staying alive, especially after a couple of difficult results for Mourinho. Obviously they lost against Chelsea in the Champions League, which was some people kind of building it up as a big game for him, but I don't think it was ever going to go any other way, realistically, dropping points against Rio Ave. But, his team find themselves just 4 points off top spot, and, have kind of weathered what looks like a pretty difficult spell. Kevin, I don't know if you kind of how you see Benfica's performance in this game, because it was it was a lot about restricting Porto, which I think, listen, maybe was the smart thing to do, because on paper Porto certainly came into the game in much better form and a much better place to attack the game.
100%. I mean, Mourinho recently, at least, has been going on about this sort of narrative of his players not being prepared to give a lot more physically than what they have at the moment. He's also had a few words to say about players like Sjöldrup being a player indicated for a certain type of game. He's clearly not very comfortable with all the options he has at his disposal. I think it's shown in the substitutions that he made in this game. Not using all of them, using them very late on as well. So when that happens and you have a manager like Mourinho who you depend on him a lot for that sort of pragmatic approach, he's a manager who will always put the result first and do whatever is needed to get, even if it is a draw, if it is the more positive result. And I think it's undeniable that Benfica, away from home, given their recent run of form, and Porto's run of form at the moment, that Benfica will be a little bit more, they'll be a happier side coming away with that point in comparison to Porto. So consider that you are constructing a narrative, if you are Mourinho, of survival, of staying alive. I think it's very, just as you said with that quote there, I think it really personifies the approach he's trying to get. He's trying to get a fighting response from his players, even though there isn't huge conditions to do a lot more with the ball at the feet and play some free-flowing, brilliant football. I think Mourinho doesn't have full confidence in his squad, and he's just trying to get reactions and see where he can go, just slowly and perhaps survive until January, bring a couple of reinforcements in, and go from there. And this isn't to criticise Benfica or Mourinho in any sort of way, because I think that they did a very good job in nullifying Porto. Porto looked unlike themselves a lot of the time in their press, in the way that they managed to explore the wide areas. When they managed to do that with a little bit more effectiveness, when they tried to overload those sides, I think they had a little bit more success. It's very difficult to break down the team with the likes of Enzo doing the game that he did. He was pretty much impeccable, probably Benfica's best player. Both of the centre backs, António Silva and Otamendi, pretty much faultless as well. They're pretty much known for their box defending. In a high line, you could probably point out a couple of better players in the league. But when it comes to defending, through being in deeper areas, they're brilliant. And I think it showed that the strategy in this game was really nullify Alan Varela, which the two front men do the very, very much a lot of ease, just the way that they always cut that passing lane into him. Varela couldn't really get into the game for that reason. And he is, at the end of the day, Porto's first inspiration point. So I think Benfica will be very happy for that reason, because defensively they showed that they are willing for the fight, that they can stop these sides with a lot of attacking potency, very much intense sides. I mean, if you look at the physicality of Porto until this point in the season, in compared to what Mourinho has been saying about his Benfica side, I think you can justify the happiness from his side, even though it wasn't the most exciting game of football. Big chances, or at least goal-scoring chances, shots at goal, were few and far between in this game in comparison to what we saw and what we praised so much at the start of the season, the Sporting Porto game. But we need to consider what Mourinho was coming to. The moment of Benfica, you saw in the stands an ugly moment between Benfica fans themselves, the turbulence of what happened with Lage, even from the beginning of this calendar year. Obviously, the elections, the games aren't always going to be easy. To get a point at the Dragão, as Benfica have also shown in recent seasons, isn't always the easiest thing. So I think they have a lot of merit in the way that they played defensively. Offensively, I thought there was a little bit of inspiration. Sudakov Pavlidis looks more creative and with a little bit more intent and cutting edge than anything that they were showing earlier in the season, even though it looked like a lot of their attacking attempts was with those sole two players, Pavlidis almost holding up the play and Sudakov trying to explore little pockets of space. I thought that was a positive sign. If you give them a little bit more support and Benfica on the front foot in future games, perhaps they'll be a little bit happier in the future. Luka Bacio is that sort of player that there is a trade-off, a little bit like Di Maria. Defensively, he's not perfect. Considering Dedic behind, who's got his defensive worries, that might be a little bit of a worry in general, a weak point to exploit if you are the opposition. But what Luka Bacio gives Benfica offensively is what they've been lacking the whole season, which is someone who will actually take on the creative burden, try and try and try again, attack the width, playing behind, and put on those dangerous balls, and even the little dribble every now and again. Other than Sheldrup, who hasn't got the physical capabilities, I don't see anyone in this Benfica side doing that. That's a current option. So I think there is a little bit of potential for Benfica. I think they did well enough in this game. Porto had difficulties that they haven't had as much this season to play their own game. This looked a little bit unlike the Porto Farioli that we've come accustomed to in this early stage. Obviously, not all games are going to be plain sailing. I'm going to follow on just to close onto a little bit of what Andrew said. Mora on the 89th minute is never going to be fathomable for me, just because of the talent of the player, considering that this was a game where, as much as Benfica can be criticised by many for being conservative, and perhaps the stature of the club won't really allow for that, even though it is sensible, or if it is even optimal, Porto also didn't really risk too much in terms of system, throwing too many players forward. It looked like a very conservative sort of game in comparison to what we've seen before. And Porto have more than enough players that can provide that individual moment. Dennis Gull has been on a good run of form. Samuel, as Andrew already said, struggled in this game. I think, considering what he did against Tondela, what he's done in the last few games where he's come in, perhaps that would have been a solution to explore a little bit earlier. William Gomes, we know what he can do from distance. He's been a constant thorn in the side. And if you pair that with Rodrigo Moura, you already have two players that are capable of unlocking a defence in an instant. And it looked like it was going to be a case of personnel to unlock it. We saw Morata, not even sure if he was offside in that chance that we were, that was mentioned and that was so talked about after the game. But if there's going to be someone, it would be a player like him. And it just comes to show that if Porto did want to push really for that win and didn't really, I think it showed that they weren't too dissatisfied with the draw, as much as they could have been frustrated by Benfica's choice of strategy for this game. I think there is definitely that question to be asked about Borja Sainz. But regardless, you cannot have Rodrigo Mora in any game, realistically, sat on the bench for 89 minutes. The talent speaks for itself, and we can come and talk about whatever tactical or defensive vulnerabilities he might have. It's Rodrigo Mora, and that might seem a little bit early to say, like, justify a player with like status, considering he's so young, considering he's so inexperienced, but that is the level of talent and quality that he has. So that is probably Farioli's biggest mistake in this game. I think it's two sides that chose to embrace a little bit of more of a cautious nature in this game. And I don't think anyone's too surprised about the result, given that, even if Porto perhaps did justify the win a little bit more than Benfica.
Well, just to add to that, I think it was a good point you're making about Farioli and maybe his inability to throw the kitchen sink at it as you would early on in the game. And I think when you look at Mourinho and the way Benfica was set up, Mourinho would have been thinking, okay, we're going to make it very difficult for them to play their game, and we're going to get them to play our game. And so what basically happened was Porto were trying to get around the very well-organized Benfica team, and they weren't able to build any momentum because of that. Benfica were making some very good sort of, I wouldn't say tactical fouls, but like they were being overly physical in some situations. Particularly Enzo, you know, I agree. Enzo had probably his best game that I've seen him have at Benfica, and he was, you know, he was a revelation in this game. But I think you're also seeing the difference in experience. Mourinho knew what he had to do in this game. And he got the team to sort of do that. Farioli, I think, ran out of ideas, and he also is a he's not obsessed, but he is kind of obsessed with the team doing exactly what he wants them to do and playing in that way that he wants them to play. And I think that's where his reluctance to bring Rodrigo Moura on earlier comes from, where, you know, there's a point where you have to say, you know what, we have to go for it. We have to. We've brought on William Gomes, that's not quite working. We have this, you know, a superstar. You know, it's a bit premature, I know, but he's so fantastically talented. And you know, we saw what happened as soon as he got on the pitch. He's a guy who wants to take on players. He wants to try and find a solution. And although there's other parts of his game that aren't that great, you have to do this in a big game like that. You have to, particularly, you know, he scored the winner in the midweek as well. He's in good form. He's a talented player, and I think he definitely should have come on earlier, if maybe not even started. I don't know.
I think this is it's a very, very interesting point and a very interesting aspect of the game, you know. And I think most people who watched the game at home would have thought the same thing that I know we probably all thought throughout the second half about when is Farioli gonna like really go for it or really make that change that perhaps will just swing the momentum of the game. Of course, you know, there's multiple things to consider as well. Perhaps in his defense, he's also considering that he's still got quite a young team. In some ways, perhaps he even looks at his players is maybe slightly less experienced compared to Benfica and or himself as slightly less experienced as Mourinho, and understand that there's still a threat there that although he, I assume, trusts his team completely to win this game, there's always that chance that if it doesn't go right and you it's a very losable game as well. If you make the wrong decision, perhaps the decision that isn't the most the safest decision, there's always a possibility to lose the game. So I can sometimes see both sides of it. The only thing that I'll add to the to that discussion is, you know, almost regardless of whether or not he could have made the changes sooner and what have you, I still think when I look back on the game that Porto had the chances to win the game. I think for me the big chances are Pepe in the first half when the ball forced him on his left foot inside the box, and I think he should finish that chance. I know it's a weaker foot, but I think that should be a goal. And then Rodrigo Moura in the last minute. And even perhaps there was the Gabby Vega chance from outside the box. You know, these are kind of maybe more like half chances, but for me, there's still two or three quite clear-cut chances that Porto have that Benfica don't, that I think probably should have been taken. And in that sense, perhaps there's a slight slight disappointment. Andrew, I'm interested in your perspective on, because we talk about maybe Farrow couldn't have done much wrong except maybe make some changes. Do you think he will have learned anything from his team in this game? Do you think he perhaps sees some of these players maybe slightly different? Because obviously everything's been going so well. There's not really been the need to make changes to the side, but do you think perhaps this game might have shifted that mentality somewhat? I know you've already mentioned one or two of the players that you think might
Yeah,
come in or out.
he's certainly a very smart guy, and he's also learning on the job. He's a young manager himself, so this would have been something to learn from. And you're right, it has been sort of, you could say, plain sailing, because things have been going right, and this is where you sort of learn about your squad and what they're really made of when things start going wrong, or when things aren't going all their way. So he definitely would have learned from this. I think he'll look at it and next time maybe take action earlier, or maybe set up differently from the beginning. I'm not sure he really anticipated how well Benfica were going to be set up and how organized they were going to be, and he just didn't have a solution to that. He didn't know sort of where to go next. So since we're talking about this, I was actually interested to know what you guys think about the Sheldrup stuff with Mourinho as well. Because obviously he's, Mourinho's just got here. Sheldrup's been here a couple of years. He hasn't really, been that impressive. He's kind of been in and out, hot and cold. And then for him to sort of take this position with Mourinho, to be talking about him so openly, and it could just be one of these Mourinho things, these old things that he used to do, where he's trying to get a reaction from the player and all this kind of old school stuff. And whether it works or not, I don't know. But if you're not playing Sheldrup there, then who's playing in that position, and how do you get around that?
Yeah, man, I'll go on. I'll let you run with this first. I'll come back in a later, but
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, just because I don't think that the criticism is at all unjustifiable, just not even based on Sheldrup's performances until this season, because I think it's been a little bit underwhelming, at least in comparison to the reputation that he came in with. But just because of the style of play, he is in fact a player who's a lot more small space. And when you contrast that with a few of the other players that you've got in the squad, the likes of Dedic, Lukaku, who's come in, who's looked more threatening overall since he's come in. Even Sudakov, the work that he was putting in this game against Porto, all the work running into space, I'm not too sure that Sheldrick is capable of doing that. At least his physical capacity isn't that. He has clear limitations. He isn't that explosive. He isn't that quick in general. So I can understand why Mourinho would say something like that. Obviously, he is trying to get a reaction out of his play. He's not going to shunt to the side pretty much his only or his best viable option for that position, the most natural, at least that's fully fit at this current moment, because otherwise you've got to kind of make a compromise, which is having Sudakov further away from his preferred central zones, perhaps Bastiani, but perhaps a little bit better on the right-hand side. Can cut in, use his left foot, and because you limit the angles that left-footed player that can use when they play on the left, and he doesn't seem too convinced by the likes of João Rego and any other player, even the likes of an Ivan Lima, who's in the Benfica Academy. I don't see that happening. If we're going to see that with any sort of prevalence, even as Ron Vlahos and pushing Sudakov to the left, I don't know. I think we would have seen a few more signs of that. So it is an interesting one, because I'm not sure that there's an immediate replacement or an obvious one or a perfect one without going into the transfer market, because there's a clear trade-off with any solution that he finds within his squad at the moment. So I'm assuming that he's persisting with Sheldrick. He's trying to get a reaction, and hopefully that does happen for Benfica, because that is a slight problem area at the moment, just because there's nothing that he's completely bringing to the game at the moment. At least with the likes of Lukaku, the production might not be there and might not be a whole lot of end product goal contributions, but there is a threat. Sheldrup, he can pass a whole while of the game, a very considerable period, and really not look too involved, really not threaten, push back his marker, his defence, and it looks like Benfica can need that at this moment in time, just to have a little bit more breathing space. It doesn't look like there's a whole lot of benefit to have a Sheldrup on the pitch if he's not having a whole lot of productivity.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I suppose there's two ways to even look at it. One, in the more simpler way, is I don't think he's wrong. I do think that Schlotterup is probably not the player that Benfica need. I think he's slightly limited as a player in general. Probably not, on that top level of young player that Benfica like. I think he's almost part of a group of quite a few young players that they've brought in as signings recently, who've kind of all been quite similar, not quite of the level that you would hope. Him, Tengstedt springs to mind. Even those, it might be a bit too harsh to say now, but the likes of like Rollheiser and Plesciani, those kind of players who just haven't really made the impact. So I don't think he's wrong. But I mean, the thing that stands out to me is it does seem like, in the 2 short weeks that Mourinho has been here, we've been given the full gamut of his playbook, basically, and in almost everything that he's been doing and saying is kind of what we've come to expect. And I think actually, it would be interesting to throw this back to you, Andrew, because the way I see it is a manager who obviously sees this as a good opportunity. He's obviously very excited to be at the club, but also recognizes that there's a lot of things out of his control. He doesn't have a transfer window until January. He's moved walking into a club who are not the favourites to win the league, who are probably not best placed to challenge for the title in terms of the squad and what have you, are probably going to struggle in Europe in a competition that they're in. So there's a lot of ways that things could go wrong, and he's kind of not necessarily go wrong, but not go fantastically. And he does seem to be kind of forced into these Mourinho-esque moves that we've been seeing so often. And this one, for me, the kind of public challenging of a player is almost, I see it as part of that, because these are, of course, conversations that could go on behind closed doors. So when a manager chooses to do it publicly, for me, there's a reason more than just what he's trying to get out of the player. That's how I see it.
Well, I don't think Mourinho was ever forced into doing any of these kind of things. I think everything he does is
Very
quite
true.
deliberate, and that's why it was so interesting to see him do this, because he's chosen to sort of pick on Sheldrup, who is a young player, and yes, he's not as great as people thought he was, because when he was at Milan and even before that, there was all this talk about he's the next big thing, etc., etc. And it hasn't really worked out, and he's never really been impressive in a Benfica jersey. So Mourinho's doing his Mourinho stuff. I think he's very good at Mourinho's very good at sort of making it about something else at all times. If he's not performing on the pitch, he's going to find a way to make it about something else, and
Absolutely.
he'll keep going through this kind of Rolodex of steps that he has that he's used for years and years and years. And it has served him well, and it's served him badly sometimes. I'm not, yeah, I think he is kind of trying to buy time and not get too much pressure on him. And he knows how much weight his words have. So for him to sort of do this, he knows it's going to make headlines, and it has made headlines, all the way up to the national team coach talking about it. So we'll see. I mean, if it works, we're going to be, in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about like, oh, wow, what a stroke of genius from him. If it does work, I'm not sure it will. I don't think Sheldrup has the capacity. Otherwise, we would have seen it by now.
I agree. I thought it was quite a surprising tactic. It's certainly not what I would have done. Very quickly before we move on, and not to dwell on Mourinho too much, but Andrew, I was just interested, for any, maybe for myself and anyone who didn't watch, what was Mourinho's reception like? Because, the coverage that I watched on the UK coverage, I didn't tune into any kind of pre-match build-up or anything, so I didn't get to see much around it. But yeah, it's interesting to hear about that.
So there were some really, I'd say, disappointing reactions, and some really, I'd say, disgraceful chants, some really bad chants that really shouldn't be repeated, and I think that the club will be punished for it. There's some videos of it. It's not even worth repeating. But of course, there's going to be some sort of toxicity around his return for some of the super fans, and it's understandable. I obviously was, really sad to see him sort of come out like that and go to the dugout, and to it sucks, but we're grown ups. This is football. No hard feelings. He'll always be a legend, and it's like I said, I'm not super worried about him ever finding the level of success that he had at Porto with Benfica. He did what he had to do. I think a lot of people will still be sour with it for years to come, if he even stays at Benfica years. I think the reception was probably more sour than he expected. I think he thought it was going to be a bit more like, muted or not so bad. But that's not how it is, you know. Football is emotional, and that's kind of what makes football great.
Yeah, and it's one of the biggest derbies in world football, so it was never going to be straightforward. But gents, let's move on and talk about the other Clásico that happened this weekend. Perhaps Clásico is stretching it slightly, but the other big game that happened this week, Sporting took on Braga. A disappointing result, unfortunately, from Sporting's perspective. A stoppage time penalty they conceded to draw 1-1 with Braga. A game that they were certainly favourites to win on current form, and a first half goal from Luis Suarez, which was, got things off to a positive start, probably the start we expected. But it felt like, from my perspective, that they just couldn't get a grip on the game. They couldn't make the impact, that sustained impact on the game that they would have wanted to get the win over the line. And in the end, they were punished, you have to say, by some fairly lax defending from Morten Hjulmand from a set piece, which gave away the penalty. A very good point from Brog's perspective, which we'll come on to. But Kevin, yeah, I'm sure this will be a very disappointing result from a lot of, well, all Sporting fans' perspective.
Yeah, it's the repetition of the Afonso Patrão goal, the Gorbi goal. This isn't the first time that Braga score a last minute winner or goal to get something from Alvalade. And that's kind of what hurts, just because there is a pattern. This isn't a one off. Not against Braga and not for Rui Borges and not this season, because if we go back to the Estoril game, there was a
Very
lot of
true.
the same themes, in all honesty. Estoril had control of the game, at least of the ball, for large periods, at least more significant periods than you would want, more significant periods than you would expect, and in really uncomfortable periods of the game, just because Sporting never went too far to find a 2-0. They seemed very comfortable protecting the 1-0 lead, and we did mention last week that that comes with its risks, and lo and behold, it just took one absolutely mindless decision from Hjulmand. I don't know what the need was for the shirt to pull, but that happens, I guess, is what it is. Could have been called earlier on in this game, even. I think Maxi Araújo had a more blatant one earlier in this game. I don't want to go into the refereeing, because if anything, I think that it was even a little bit harsher towards Braga. So it wouldn't even defend Sporting if I wanted to do that, but I genuinely think Claudio Pereira is one of is the worst referee in this league, just because he makes games unwatchable with the amount of stoppages, his posture in the game, the way that he tries to control the game. I think this was a very poor one, especially Braga Sporting. It's cooked up some real crackers in recent years. Amorim's last game, that one against Braga with
Amazing.
the winner from Harder and all of that. The 5-0s or the 5-1s, we've had some great games. This was not one of them for either side, as much as Braga will be pleased. And it is completely Sporting's fault. It's merit to Braga, but at the same time, I don't know where this Sporting from last season, in the midst of all of the injury crisis and lack of physical capability to do more, at that point, you could kind of understand it. You had a whole lineup of players out, but you're seeing the same patterns come into this game, and the conditions are very, very different. Rui Borges has a full squad. He's got a plethora of options that he does count on. He has rotated. He rotated midweek against Napoli. Braga had less rest, played their full 11 midweek, and they looked a whole lot more capable, more intense when they needed to be, at least. I know that Vincennes is kind of philosophies to be a little bit more controlled. And the way that Sporting played completely played into Braga's hands. Braga did a very good job in trying to condition Sporting in their first phase. They didn't give any space at all. Sporting were limited to, a lot of the time, playing their way into trouble, just into congestion, making a lot of rash, forced, unforced even errors. I don't know what Trincão's issue is at the moment, just playing into congestion, dribbling into no man's land. But it seemed like a repeated theme. Just look for the long ball forward, and anytime that it was time to play those short combinations, Braga gave us a lesson, if anything. Braga gave a lesson in winning the second balls, winning the duels, being more intense without the ball. Because when Sporting applied a little bit of pressure, they did have a little bit of joy. They nearly forced a number of mistakes from the Braga centre halves, but it just didn't come with enough regularity. When Sporting really ramped up the pressure, moved the ball with a little bit more intensity, tried to explore different avenues, not always look for that, look to almost accelerate and bypass phases of play. The chances were created in the last couple of minutes. They did create a number of chances, a couple of their best ones in the game, if anything. So I'm sat here and I don't know who to blame for this sort of victory because a lot of merit is for Braga. But at the same time, I feel like Højbjerg has almost regressed into his old ways because whoever knows Højbjerg knows that last minute winners against his teams are not uncommon. The amount that happened at Vitória, even last season at Sporting, a little bit concerning. Winners all dropped points in general. I think it's very concerning that his words aren't really reflecting on the players. I mean, he's always been a manager who's talked a lot about attitude. Perhaps the tactical nous is not the level of Omri, but he maintains that sort of philosophy around the attitude. And when there isn't the inspiration, there has to be that sort of attitude. I don't think we saw a whole lot of it yesterday. I think it was a very lethargic performance. I think that is what concerns me the most. And there was a lot of performances from players that do concern me a little bit. Inácio has looked completely out of sorts. And it's something I've been saying on Twitter for a little while, but I don't think that Inácio is ever going to be elevated from this sort of level. I don't think he has the physical capabilities. I think he's very error prone. It's just gone under the radar. It's starting to be a little bit more evident because Braga got a lot of joy, at least through Pau Vitor when he was on the pitch, and even Salazar attacking that sort of channel. Morita didn't have his best game in terms of tracking and helping out defensively. I think he was a little bit off it, which he has those sorts of games. Look, every player is entitled to his off games, but I think that was another one. Pizzo Gonçalves and Trincão, they're players of volume. They will take the risks and try and take the decision. None of them have been coming off at the moment. It looks like they're playing themselves into more trouble than anything else. I think you could probably justify the likes of Kostadashvili or Alisson or Ioannidis coming on earlier in this sort of game. Another note that I have to say before anything else, how does Juan Simões go from not playing pretty much the whole season, just a couple of loose minutes, just dead minutes at the end of games, just to get himself integrated, I guess, to be thrown into Napoli away in the Champions League to then being sidelined through option, nothing physical. I do not understand the lack of coherence there, but I'm not the coach. I thought he was brilliant against Napoli, one of the standouts. Could have done if we were going to embrace this sort of game and play into Braga's hands a little bit, you needed to be a little bit more threatening on the transition because that's where Braga have suffered a lot of their issues this season behind that high line with players that aren't exactly indicated to do so. But it looked like Sporting didn't go one way or the other. They got caught in two minds, and the only difference between this game and the Estoril game is that Estoril was a warning, this was the confirmation. Still, perhaps doesn't have the individual quality, but Braga does, could have scored earlier in the game, and the penalty is no less than what they deserved at the end of the day. So I think it's concerning overall, and I don't want to paint it as all doom and gloom because there's been more than positive sides of Sporting this season, but the issue is that it looks like it's been a forward trajectory, and this game was very much a look to all of the worries that we had about Sporting looking before that. So we'll see what the reaction is like after the international break because Sporting needs to start playing their game again. It needs to be intense. Højbjerg needs to trust his whole squad if the worry is physical because this sort of strategy does not work. Sporting cannot play as the smaller-minded team. They need to be on the ball. They need to feel that comfort. They need to feel in control in some sort of way. Braga control the game. They conditioned Sporting in every sorts of way. Their press was a lesson. Sporting, the man-to-man press of Braga just outscored, in that sort of sense, what Sporting did. Sporting's looked disorganized, completely disjointed. The distances between the midfield and the attack at times is shocking. Although Braga, on the flip side, they managed to congest it so well. I think this was very much a side of, or a tale of, for everything that we've had negative to say against Braga, and Braga have been far from impressive at stages in this season. That is a 1-0, or a 1-0 to Braga in terms of how the manager set up, in terms of their performance. The draw, I'm not sure, is 100% reflective of the game. If a team deserved to win, would have 100% been Braga. I think the 1-1 doesn't punish Sporting enough for the strategy that they took. And yeah, I think that you can paint a lot of similarities between what Benfica and Braga did well, but I don't think you can paint a whole load of similarities between what Porto and Sporting did well. I think Sporting were far more lethargic and a lot less threatening for larger stages for the game, with a lot less control of the ball.
Yeah, and yeah, very interesting points. And a couple of things I do want to come back to you on in a second, but I think ultimately it is a performance which kind of just brings back to the surface a few of the perhaps issues that we may have seen a couple of times this season to suggest that, Sporting aren't kind of at their 100% best, or maybe the manager's not got everything 100% sussed out. But yeah, I mean, to be fair, Andrew, credit where it's due. I mean, we spent the best part of last week's podcast saying that basically Carlos Vicens deserved to be sacked, and then in the past week, not only did they have this result, a very important draw away from home at the reigning champions, but they also got that 2-0 win at Celtic in the Europa League, which is a very good result. Still, a decent amount of change, chopping and changing from the manager, so that we have criticised. But listen, two decent results. So, like I said, we have to give credit where it's due.
Absolutely. We've been very harsh on Vincent. I say we because we have,
Yeah.
not just me.
No,
And
absolutely.
it's been
Yeah.
deserved, certainly, because there is a lot of sort of, there was a lot of clueless things he would do in some of the setups for certain games. And I think this was I wouldn't say a statement performance, but in a way it is. It kind of saves his bacon a bit for a little bit longer, because he was under some pressure. A lot of chopping and changing. I would just like to see consistently a starting 11 start again for the next game. I just want to see what that looks like. I bet you it looks good. I bet you they know what they're doing. They've, a couple games on the bounce with the same starting 11, and it's just different. So the positives for Braga, João Moutinho. I mean, I'm not even going to go into it. He's just a fantastic
Unfortunately.
player. Such a great player. Yes, against Sporting, of course. And obviously that sucks, but a great game for him. I thought Florian Grillitsch was really good in
I know
this
you'd
game.
called for him to get into the team as well.
I did, yeah, and I actually do think Florian Grillitsch and Gorbis may be the midfield, and that sucks for Moutinho, but I do think that's probably their best midfield. And we saw that later in the game when Gorbi came on, it just looked different. Gorbi's legs are just, he's got legs, he knows how to intercept, he knows how to follow play, and he's very good. So that was also a positive. Other than that, some of the negatives, I think Vitor Carvalho in defence, he could have done better with the goal, and I'm not really sure why you start him, but okay, fine. Hornacek, who I've praised endlessly this season, could have done better with the goal as well. Maybe I'm being harsh, but I don't think I am. He kind of just bats his hand at it, but he's also
It kind
saved them
of,
a lot this
sorry,
season.
Andrew, it kind of looks like he takes his hand away,
Yeah,
because
well,
the
he kind of
trajectory of
does
the ball
this.
is very strange.
Yeah, he does this thing where he puts his hand towards and then moves it away, like towards him.
Yeah, he definitely hesitates.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what was sort of going through his mind, but like I said, he saved them a lot this season. So that was maybe just a little sort of brain melt. But yeah, Gerd Horter, good. Zalazar, very good on that right hand side. Overall, they looked like the team that were in control. Sporting helped them with that. They allowed them to be that, and I think the Sporting's deficiencies are becoming clearer every week. I think they, at the moment, look like a team that are unmotivated, some of the players going through bad periods. I'm a huge fan of Hjumlund, and he had a good game against Estoril. Poor game in this one, and not just because of the penalty. A very poor game just overall. He wasn't pressing at all. Morita as well, very poor on the press. Gonçalo Inácio, he was so lethargic. And he's one of your centre backs. You need your centre backs to be sharp in a game like this. You really do. They were probably it was helpful for them to be up against Paul Vitor, who I don't think is a very good striker. They would have been better suited if Fran Navarro had started this game. I think you needed someone like him. There was a couple chances in the first half. There's one particularly, I think it was Rodrigo Salazar puts in a low cross, and then Paul Vitor, instead of controlling it and taking the shot, he tries to lay it off, and then just like a bad pass. A real striker. I mean, a real striker controls that and takes the shot. So that was probably good for this for the centre back pairing for Sporting, to be dealing with a striker like that. I thought Suarez good again. One of the sort of better players on the day for Sporting. Rui Silva made some good saves. Good solid goalkeeper. Other than that, there's not a lot of positives for Sporting. Trincão just anonymous in this game. Fullbacks didn't really do much. Araujo seemed very worked up, and he just didn't seem like himself. I think we're probably in a position where you can't blame all of it on Højbjerg, and you can't blame all of it on the players, but it's definitely half and half their fault because something's going on. If I was Højbjerg now, I'd be looking at your younger players, your academy players, be saying, okay, you know what, let's get these guys in and see. Let's get João Simões in the midfield for a couple of games, see what happens. Alisson, every time I see Alisson Sanchez, he's so impressive. Get
Had a
him in there,
good,
let's
very
see what
good chance in
happens.
this game as well that he
He
created for
did big
himself.
chance.
Yeah,
Yeah,
a couple
and
of
he
them,
does
if
that every
anything.
time. He does that every time. Every time he comes on, he creates something. He's always trying to do something. So maybe that's what Højbjerg needs to do to sort of reignite his team, because maybe there's a few players that kind of think, their place is secure, and you kind of need them on their toes. I wonder if this is also a bit of the what we spoke about earlier at the beginning of the season, rather, about perhaps individuals being very important for this team to work, and maybe this is just a case of all the individuals going through a bad period at the same time. And there isn't enough sort of confidence and form throughout the team. I think Suarez took his goal well, though, and I think that's really positive. You have a striker that can score good ones, and he can score ugly ones too. And he finds a way, and that's what you need from your striker. So yeah, overall, not a classic, not the greatest game. It helped Carlos Vinicius a lot, helped Braga a lot. I think they'll look at this game and say, you know what, let's try and build on this because we've had a torrid season. If you're Sporting, I think Højbjerg is probably scratching his head right now. Like, where do we go from here? And I think he needs to look at the youth because Sporting have a history of just obviously producing great players, and they have a lot in their locker at the moment as well.
Yeah, and listen, I think these two results for Vicenza are huge coming up to international break. I mean, we know it's international break is essentially sacking season, right? It's when these clubs make these changes with that time to bring someone in and work on the training ground. And so to get not just this result, but I think the result against Celtic as well just means he keeps his job for the international break, and maybe that will benefit him. I mean, I think you make a really astute point, Andrew, on the fact that it is almost Sporting's issues right now are almost equally down to both the manager and the players, because I think both of them are at fault. And I think it is also fair to say that, when a team like Sporting is maybe just having a moment when things aren't quite clicking, a lot of players aren't at their best. I think where I fall down on that side of the debate is that I think there is a certain part of it which comes down to leadership. There has to be a figure at the club who will take responsibility for that situation and come up with the solutions, whether that be, like you said, with bringing through the young players. And of course, that has to be Rui Borges. Not to say that he won't be that person. He could definitely still do that. But Kev, I don't know if you see it the same way, but for me, I think we're certainly looking at a team where there's tests. They're being tested, whether that's with the kind of internal form with the players or with clubs finding ways to play against them that really limit what they're able to do and not being able to overcome that. They are facing these tests right now that perhaps we didn't see under the best spells of Amorim, where they were just able to blow everybody away. But yeah, those tests exist now, and I wonder whether how you see that progressing.
It's a massive test. because no way how you paint it. For all of the success that Hoiberg did last season, it was very much an interim manager sort of job. It was a survival job. It was get to the end of the season, grind out the results any way you know how with whatever players are available. And Sporting had the luck that they had a big Swedish guy up front who just changed games by himself. He might not do it now at Arsenal, but he was sure doing it at Sporting and in a way that we've rarely seen in Portugal. So, look, when you lose that sort of figure, which, regardless of the result, he'd probably get you a goal or at least be very influential in getting the side a goal. When you lose that sort of figure up front and that one man who will push the defence back, give his side some breathing room. When you lose that in difficult moments, it can be slightly more difficult to overcome because then you're not just looking at the spirit of the team, which I think has always been unquestionable, at least when it's very much still a Ruben Amorim side. When Hoiberg starts to put his mark on it and things start to go wrong, just like individual mistakes, which we saw in this game, and a slightly less inspired performance, which happens to every single team, then questions are asked and you have a number of players who can make the difference, but it's looks like we're in a point of form where none of them look increasingly capable of doing it in the moment that is necessary. They've done it this so far this season, but what then? And at that point, you need to depend on the sort of intensity of the game, how you can put your mark on it, how you can play on your terms. And Sporting failed to do that. So I think that's the biggest concern because it looked like Sporting was playing Braga's game when Sporting were at home. Sporting are the favourites and they have every single obligation to make Braga do that as the Braga that are out of form, the Braga that are experimental. So that is my biggest worry just because it looks like a performance that could have been justified and seen last season, but you can't see it this season. So moving forward, it's going to be very interesting to see how this gets resolved because I think it's a case of seeing the next performance. What sort of rhythm is put into the game? What intensity is it played at? What happens after the first goal goes in? Because at the moment, it seems like a certainty that Sporting will score. Under Hoiberg, there's not been a game where they don't score one goal. But what happens if it gets to the 70-80th minute? Earlier in the season, we saw Sporting responded. Will they do it at this current moment, like Porto have done? But been put, they've been put under the cosh against Salzburg, for example. They came out after it. Let's see if Sporting can respond in the same manner, because I think this is the biggest patch of, perhaps, I wouldn't say negativity necessarily, because the results aren't ne necessarily too negative. I mean, the Supertasa was certainly a bigger question mark because it's the start of the season. A couple of the reinforcements weren't as integrated as they are now. But I think it is very uncertain at the very least. And if anything, this game here, and considering what happened against Estoril and the response that was seen in the performance against Napoli, kind of justifies Hoiberg in a certain way because I think a lot of people were questioning why so many changes were made in that game against Napoli, but you saw the likes of Simões responding in a way that I don't think Morita did in this game. Alisson playing with an energy that I didn't see. The key figures that you expect to really break the game and turn it into Sporting's favour, Alisson did what the likes of Trincão and Pote didn't. So I think it's going to be very interesting. I agree with Andrew. I think that Simões firstly needs to be trusted more than he has been thus far this season because the dynamic between Morita and Kostadinovic has been imperfect. You've got characteristics for both of them which make the side better, but none has been perfect. And Simões, I'll repeat it. I think he's one of the best players against Napoli. I don't think Yulman or Morita has been one of the better players in the last few games, at least not to the standard that we would expect them to do. And in this current side, their job is very, very important when the press is kind of as dysfunctional as it is at the moment. So Yeah, it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen because we've seen the ugly from Sporting. We've seen this sort of lethargic play, but we've also seen them rush out of nowhere and almost take Portugal by storm again, putting them right up next to Porto, the revelations, and with the intensity that they play at, it's very impressive to do so. So, yeah, it's going to be very much a response of what energy is going to be put into the next game and what players will be able to do that. Because one thing is for sure, the likes of Pedro Gonçalves, considering the physical capability of him at the moment, if he plays another 90 minutes straight, I think you'll have your answer just based on that.
Yeah, and I think you know what you make a very you're very right to raise the point that there's no panic at the moment. It is more just a case of some of these shortcomings perhaps coming to the fore. And I think maybe something required of Sporting that hasn't been in a while, you know, spent a long time leading the pack. And I think now what's required is maybe a resilience. And can this team have that kind of more gritty mindset rather than the kind of luxury attitude that they had when they were sort of leading the league in the way that they were? So it's a slightly different dynamic, but definitely interesting to see how it develops. All right, well, let's talk about some games from outside of the big three, outside of the top four. Some fantastic fixtures as always around the league. Normally, there's a structure to this. I've picked the next one purely because it was my favourite game of the weekend. Nacional 3, Moreirense 2. Fantastic game to witness. Nacional made it 2 wins from 2 against higher placed opposition in their last two games. And they twice came from behind against Moreirense and scored a late penalty to make it 3-2 against, let's not forget, the league's fourth place side. Chucho Ramirez scored that penalty as well as an earlier penalty in the game. And Moreirense, look, they were somewhat in control. They found themselves 2-1 up. And then I think it's fair to say two big questionable defensive decisions made a big impact on the game. The first, young Vasco Souza fouling the last man, Paulinho, to get himself sent off, which got allowed Moreirense, allowed Nacional back into the game. And then the captain, Marcelo, deciding to punch away a corner, which gave the Nacional the penalty to win the game. Andrew, lots of drama in this game. I know we've talked quite positively about both these teams this season, and well deserved. There was good football in this game, but there was also a healthy dose of drama. So I think it made a very good combination.
Definitely, yeah. It turned into a very entertaining game. These are the kind of games I love in this league. I mean, these are two very talented young managers that have interesting ideas of football and that are doing very well this season. Nacional was one of the teams that we highlighted at the beginning of the season as a team to watch. They'd improved the squad a lot, and Thiago Margarida is really getting a tune out of them. This game, Moreirense were in control. Nacional, they know how to stay in games. They know how to impose themselves. They know what they're doing most of the time. I mean, they were able to generate 15 shots in this game, not on target, but 15 shots from Nacional against a very good Moreirense team who are in good form. They were fourth at the time. I don't know if they still are, but they were fourth at the time. So just a good game overall. Ramirez continues his good run of form of scoring goals. He's really their talisman. Mateus Dias comes back into the team. He looked great in the midfield. He always does. He really controls the tempo in that midfield. Paulinho Boia, a great footballer. There's one chance that he has where he flicks it over the defender and takes the shot. That would have been just fantastic, really just a fantastic goal. And he's such a talented player. I really liked it to see him play that solid defense, although they conceded two. You're up against a very formidable Moreirense team, so you expect that. And yeah, they continue to punch above their weight. Nacional, this is a huge win for them. They are going to continue. They're going to try and continue this momentum because they got some tough games coming up. As for Moreirense, I mean, no Guilherme Schettino, so that makes a bit of a difference. Otherwise, I thought they played pretty well. I can't really fault them too much. Other than the two kind of ridiculous, penalties that it's not ridiculous in the sense that it's not penalties. They are penalties, but just to do that is just it's kind of silly. Vasco Sousa, who's a good player and he's performed very well for Moreirense since he's arrived, he scores the goal and then he gets himself sent off. It's like, come on,
What are
man.
they teaching them in the Porto Academy, Andrew, honestly?
We're teaching them way worse stuff. So he's kind of, so yeah, I
Have you
mean,
seen Porto B in the second division? Look at their standing.
I've watched a couple of those games and they're not the easiest watches, I've got to say.
My condolences.
Alan Zingel, good player. You know, every week we talk about how good he is and how he should probably be in a bigger team. You know, I could see him at Braga or something like that. Overall, very entertaining game. I think that puts Chucho Ramirez at six goals. Yeah, so he's now joint top goal scorer in the league. It's four of them with six goals. It's Chucho Ramirez, Clayton, obviously we know that. Luis Suarez and Pablo Jovsent. And the interesting thing about that is three of them aren't in the top in the big three, let's say, only Luis Suarez, which is pretty good. And that shows you what the season has been like for the other teams in the league. But yeah, a really great sort of advert for Portuguese football, for the league itself, and another great result for Thiago Madrid.
And Kev, I know you would have enjoyed this one as well, not least for Ramirez's goals. I know he's someone that you've followed as well and bigged up in the past. Two penalties, but of course you've still got to put them away. And as Andrew points out, it really kind of adds to a very healthy goal tally, which is summing up, I think, a very, very healthy season for him so far individually.
100%. I mean, I've mentioned last week, I mentioned on bonus pod, I think I mentioned before the season on Twitter as well. I don't know how he's not getting a look in at Vitória. Obviously, Nacional managed to bring him back to Madeira. And look, they are two penalties, yes. But as you said, they need to be put away. And the whole game, he's a thorn in the side of the opposition. A very intense presser. Every time he gets the ball, although his physicality is a bit more of a target man, he still charges forward. He still likes to bring the play forward. He's not just wait for the support and lay the ball off. He's very much a man who will run with the ball if he has the capability to do so. So I think it's very much fitting for a manager like Thiago Margarido that even though can be very functional, even the individuals, they seem to be a little bit more irreverent than you would expect of your like number nine big talisman sort of figure. Even he has the confidence to make things happen on his own. I think that Andrew pretty much said it all. It's two of the best sides in the country to watch, at least in terms of the managers and their sorts of ideas, the promise that they show. You can't really fault the strategy of either of them too much. I think it was a very even game in a lot of senses. Moreirense created more than enough chances to come away with something from this game on another day. But obviously, with the individual errors that were made, perhaps slightly poorer performances from the likes of Marrakech or even Stepanovic, I think he's one of his least solid games, at least. On the ball, I don't think he had as much effect as sometimes he's had. Dueling wise, I think he was pretty much dominated, which I don't think is too common for his performances this season. But then again, a lot to pray. I think Meniñel Yan came in and he wasn't half bad. He's not Schettin. He's a very different type of player in a lot of ways because I think that dynamic with Schettin was very much cemented in the side, very much a focal point. But I don't think he did badly by any chance, by any sense of the word. I'm gonna praise once again Kick Bundles, which we're a big fan of on this show. I know you're like that, Albert, at
Thank
least.
you very much, Kev.
He
Thank you.
not perhaps not his most eventful game in terms of volume, but he does seem to be very refined, very intelligent when making that final pass. The right-hand side for Moreirense has been the standout for most of the season. Travassos just come in very well with Dinis being behind. That's been very much Moreirense's inspiration for large parts, with Alan Zing obviously drifting around and doing his thing. I'm going to complain once again against the goalkeeper, Kai Cirkel. I do have something against Ange Mouritou goalkeepers because everyone seems to think they're brilliant because they might have wonderful performances against the big three. Kai Cirkel is not all that. He's not that brilliant. I think he's having a little bit of a colder phase after the start of the season. I don't know why André Ferreira dropped to the bench. I think this is another game where he looked unremarkable. So perhaps that's something that Mourinho can tweak. And look, they're going to be more than fine because this is a one-off, very influenced by mistakes that you don't see too often. For Nacional, I think Thiago Margarida was really cracked the code. He might not dominate every single game. I think that they were quite dominant with the ball in this one. But it's when they have the ball, the phases of play that they have, it's just seamless, very fluid getting to the front. And the front players have entire confidence to create the way that they want to do. Like I don't see too many players with like the freedom of Paulinho Boia. If you look to the likes of Casapia, even then it looks a lot more systematic. You can tell that Paulinho Boia plays with a lot of freedom, and that is complete credit to the coach because he has more than enough creativity and technical ability to do so. So yeah, I'm going to check the stats if anything. I think it's a little bit of an upturn in form for Nacional. 2-0 at the start of the season, then the 1-1 with Rio Ave, the team that always draws until this week. The Sporting loss was a hard one to take for them because it wasn't all negative until that red card. They obviously beat Casapia. The Porto game was quite decent for them. I think they made it tougher than a lot of teams have done for Porto this season so far. Arouca is another case of red cards coming into it a little bit later, which is a bit of a shame. Obviously, it cancelled out with Arouca, but very tight game in a lot of senses. And now the two wins, one against Braga, one against Moreirense. Two very good teams with a lot more conditions than this, have on paper. So, look, this might be what we need, at least as the podcast, to get what we want and really say, we told you so, when saying this, is our revelation team. Perhaps this is the start of it, really pushing the likes of Gil Vicente, Moreirense, Famalicão, and so forth.
Listen. Any long-term listener to this show will know that we never miss an opportunity to say, "I told you so" when we got it right. So we look forward to that very much. And no, I think you're right to point out disappointing for Morens, obviously. Last thing I had on this was the Morens goalkeeper, Seco, has a fantastic moustache. So extra points to Morens for that because, yeah, fantastic. Although they did lose and they were overtaken in fourth spot by Gil Vicente, who beat Estrela Amadora 2-0. Great form that Gil Vicente find themselves in. Of course, Estrela Amadora, not the toughest team to play on paper, but you still have to get the result. Two first half goals for Pablo Philippe. As Andrew pointed out, he's joint top scorer in the league now. It almost fell apart when at the beginning of the second half, Andrew got a red card. Luckily, they were able to hold on to their lead, so it didn't affect them too much. It did affect my fantasy football team, which I have to say was incredibly annoying because I was going to get some clean sheet points for that. But anyway, it doesn't matter. A good win for Gil Vicente. Kevin, I know you saw this one. What did you think of
It's another Gil Vicente game at the end of the day. I don't
it?
think we need to
No.
elaborate too much upon that. Pablo has looked incredible this season. He's really matured as a striker. He looks a lot more confident to impact all phases of play. I think he was very much uptight about the goals. I think he was caught in two minds a lot of the time when coming to that sort of phase of the pitch, when it comes to the decisive moment. I think he's been injected a lot of confidence by Cesar Peixoto. All credit to him. The red card, I'd like to say they had a massive effect on the game. And obviously, Estrela did have their chances. They did look to go forward with a bit of menace. They weren't excellent. They weren't excellent chances that they created. There was a lot of shots. I think Dani Figueira did make a couple of good saves coming in, but nothing otherworldly, particularly. And obviously, Gil could have made it 3-0 at the end of the game. So I think it really shows that the Estrela, that I think we had a lot of sympathy for the change in manager, because there are some positive. There are a lot of positives in this Estrela side. The likes of Sidney Cabral, I think we've been raving about the whole season. I don't think that certain individuals, at least in this. In the defensive area, Chapo, I don't think, has been half bad in the centre of the defence. Georges Mills, I think, had a very good game in this one, and I think Jefferson Nkala came on to a very good effect. But it just looks like there's always something that's slightly disjointed, or there is one or two very influential negative performances in this side, and there's just something lacking, especially in the forward sector of the pitch. You have the likes of Kikus, who goes from an excellent performance, scoring one or two goals, and then he's completely out of the game in the next one. So there's something that is going wrong here. I think perhaps the lack of reinforcement in the midfield at times. I think that perhaps in defence, you've not got especially complementary profiles. I don't think Sheridanov is made to be a wide defender. I think he's had decent games, but he can be very easily exposed. And I think up front, it's been a whole season of trying to cement what dynamic that they want to go up front. Whether you want one player holding, one player to play off, whether you need to two players to kind of really hold the ball up and wait for the rest of the team, because you've got very little impact offensively apart from the wing backs. Because since Jovren has gone, you've got very little creativity in this side. So there are still a couple of things to cement. I think there is potential for more. Obviously, Luis Silva has just come from Bulnes mid-season. It will take a little bit of time to put his mark on the squad. I don't think it's all negative for them. I don't think it was a particularly awful performance from them. But on another day, one of those shots maybe goes in. It wasn't completely terrible, but look, I don't think you can say too much for a team who plays a whole half of football without one man. And if anything, they had a better chance to score, because look, the chance was certainly there to make the two a three from the penalty spot. So yeah, it's another Gilles Lucille game. It's another Sergio Prochot game. Like, it's the same patterns have repeated. Very, very good going down the left-hand side. Luis Stives impacts the whole game. Pablo, phenomenal in all phases. And another win for Julius Sims.
Absolutely, and all credit to them because they find themselves in a fantastic league position, and it's a great run of form and well deserved. And I think everyone knows we enjoy giving credit to these teams who are punching above their weight in the league, shall we say? Andrew, another entertaining game that caught my eye: Kasapia 2, Estoril 2. Kasapia thought they'd come from behind; they were 1-0 down, and they had the 2-1, but then they did. Concede that 83rd minute equaliser, which I think from Estoril's perspective was very valuable. I think on balance for the game, for me, a result that both teams will have to take, and probably fair, although perhaps from Casapia's perspective, you know, they're a team that a lot of people praise and admire, but perhaps don't always get the results to go along with it. But like I said, I don't think either side can really complain, although it was, I thought, quite entertaining.
Definitely an entertaining game. I think Kasapia probably had the better of the game. They created sort of more chances. I thought they played better than Estoril. Estoril are kind of going through a weird phase at the moment, despite, you know, the Sporting game last week. I haven't really seen them play very well this season. They get the point, that's good for them. But I thought Kasapia were the better team. I thought Livolant, another very good game from Livolant. Goal and assist, and one the goal particularly, holy moly, what a goal! If you haven't seen it, just go see it. It's a fantastic goal. You know, Larrazabal continues to be a very important player for them on that wing, and it seems as if Kasapia have kind of gotten over the initial sort of bad start to the season. There was a point early in the season where they just kept losing, they kept conceding, and it seemed like they forgot how to defend, which is a thing that Kasapia, they're a very good defensive team. They always have been. And it seems as if they've kind of gone back to basics a bit, looked a bit better. I mean, there's one goal where it's Jaffont tries to sort of clear it, and I think it might be the winner, actually. And it goes straight to the Shrill player who scores. And that's the kind of thing that you can't account for that. That's just one of those things that happen in football. I think they were hard done by in this game. As for Shrill, they're finding ways to get results. They're not playing at their best, but all you can do is try and find a way to stay in games and then score goals when you can. Defensively, we've spoken about Estoril's deficiencies. Defensively, they've conceded quite a lot of goals this season. I think this is goal number 13 that they've already conceded, and they're not scoring as many. They got the point, but they do need to address that. They've got a good enough squad to be better in an attacking sense. You know, players like Begraoui, who we've seen, you know, over the years play very well. Rafik Gatan, of course, very good player. Haven't seen much of Pizzi since he's returned.
No,
I'm not
true.
sure. Yeah, but I don't know what sort of condition he's in since he's come back. So yeah, I think overall they're probably both happy with the point, although Kvaratskhelia probably felt like they should have won that game. Estoril will certainly be happy with the point, and Ian Cathro will just try and build some momentum with this and get some good results on the board because they need it.
They definitely need it. And I think this is a good game because I know not everyone who listens can watch all the games, but definitely I think Liverland, as you mentioned, is a player who, if you are interested in who these players might be outside the top three who could make an impact on the league, I think he's a very interesting player, French winger, and as you say, very, very good goal in this game. Vitória are another team who've struggled recently. And when they went 1-0 down after 5 minutes at home against Santa Clara, it looked like their problems might be continuing. However, they fought back quite valiantly in the end and won 2-1 with two second half goals. A positive result and arguably one of their best performances of the season. Kev, I don't know if you how you feel about that.
Yeah, I'd say quite easily in a lot of ways their best performance, because I think if you'd said before the game Vitória have created the majority of the good chances, never looked too much in doubt in terms of the final result, that they won quite well 2-1, created a decent amount of chances against Santa Clara, which last season I think you know the reputation that they gained for themselves, being very stubborn, defensive-minded side who could break with real intent. That's everything that Vitória at times looks like they've tried to be but haven't been able to become, and exactly the sort of side that they've not liked to play in any way, shape or form. So I think they would have bitten your hand off before the game to get this sort of result, and I think they've thoroughly really deserved it. They looked like they had a little bit more intent, a little bit more variety to their play. Obviously, I think having the likes of Nogueira and Blanco, who's finally come into the side and come onto that left-hand side, provides a little bit more of a technical touch to the likes of Gustavo Silva when he was on that side, a lot more of a transitional threat. And obviously, Oliveira having a little bit of a better game finally after a little bit of a run of poor form. It all translates, because when you have more technical players and you're playing against a low block, you have more variety to try and get around that. You have more solutions with the ball at feet. And it comes to show, because although it looks like Vitória are very much a team that seem tailored to crosses into the box, it looks like the service was there. The crosses weren't as aimless as it seemed like. It looks like before the game, they were told, we need to play the long ball and we need to try and exploit in behind and put the cross in. It looked like they knew what they were doing. They had a little bit more patience and they played with a little bit more intent. They looked a little bit more confident in a lot of ways. It looked like the players who have come into the side recently, they've injected a new energy, a new mentality into the side. Whereas I think perhaps with all of the outgoings, the remainers that were playing alongside the ones from before perhaps were slightly affected. So these tweaks have, and full merit to Luis Pinto, because it's not a difficult situation to maneuver for him at all, losing so many key players in that squad. It looks like he's cementing a little bit more of an identity in this side. And the individual performances have shown. Blanco was great. Samuel, who's come into the midfield, looks very, very good. I mean, it's a little bit more energetic perhaps than what we were getting used to before. Even the likes of Mitrovic, who came in, had a good game against Braga. I think he's more tailored to this sort of game, perhaps Samuel. And even the likes of Mukendi next to him, a player that can definitely carry the ball forward, and the likes of Nogueira, who perhaps didn't have his greatest game. He's not been having a great run of form in terms of productivity, but the intent is there. And I think that's what matters in this sort of phase for Vitória after a run of quite lethargic performances, if anything. And apart from that, I think that there were two subs necessarily that were, they had a great impact. The first being Ndoye, which I'm surprised he hasn't had a few more minutes because, well, at least considering the little run of Nelson Oliveira, which he was completely inconsequential in any sort of phase of play, and considering the threat that Ndoye provides, even if it's just the aerial threat, which obviously made a little bit more use of in this game, I think you can definitely justify his presence. He came in, he got his goal. All you had to do is stick it up in there, and he attacked it with ferocity. So it's a great sign for him. And Telmo Arcangel, I thought he came in, perhaps not in his usual sorts of zones, but I think again he has that sort of game-breaking ability: one pass, one shot, one cross, one dribble. He came in and he looked like a threat again. So I think it's a phase where Vitória are very much finding their identity. Santa Clara, I don't know what's going on here because this was one of my tips for revelation of the season, or very much just to repeat what they did last season, just because it looked like they brought in a little bit of depth, in terms of the striker position, and they had a few more options, and they kept the majority of their squad, at least everyone who was very influential last season, they managed to maintain. And this was just quite lackluster at times. I mean, Vitória haven't been the most inspirational side thus far this season, and it looked like Santa Clara really struggled to get their foot in the game. And you would say, oh, last season they were very much a counter-attacking side. They didn't really have long waves of possession. And I would agree, but there's one thing having control without the ball, but it looked like they were getting very frustrated, and the defensive stability doesn't look half as much. I mean, they look like they're conceding a lot of more of the ball in areas where they really wouldn't want to, and their wide defenders were getting exposed in this game. I don't think Venancio had his worst game. I don't think he had his greatest game either, but I was not impressed by the two wide defenders. I don't think the wing backs have provided a lot, either going forward or defensively in this game. And without Gabriel Silva on his top form, it looks very difficult for Santa Clara to really have moments of inspiration without perhaps one of their other players providing a slightly unexpected goal, or Vinicius Lopes coming up with that sort of scrappy sort of goal, which he loves to do. He's a little bit more of a functional player. So I'm not too sure where Santa Clara goes from here because it is a rough run of form for them. I think they were expecting to be a little bit more solid, at least a little bit more functional and productive when they do get the chances up top, because defensively they've looked a little bit more vulnerable. I think this was one of the better performances from their goalkeeper Batista, and that's not necessarily a good thing, just because it looked like it masked. This could have been perhaps a 3-1 or a 4-1 on an unluckier day, and perhaps it's been coming to them because it's not been a run with loads of green flags.
No, and it is a shame because obviously we see it with these clubs like Santa Clara, where they have a great season and they qualify for Europe, and then there can be this strange hangover. I think with Santa Clara, it's a very different situation though, because with those other clubs that we talk, I mean, Gil Vicente as an example, who have went through the same thing. It's often a case about losing so many key players and just struggling to replicate what you did before. Whereas with Santa Clara, they arguably kept all the players, the manager, and all that kind of stuff, and yet they still have the issues, which I think is what's slightly more worrying. And obviously, you know, no panic stations yet, no kind of sense that there'll be like a relegation battle or anything like that. So one to follow, I think. Andrew, but to talk about another team that's struggling, I mean, we've talked about at great length about AVS's struggles this season. In fact, we've been quite brutal in our assessment of their form. for one brief moment, it looked like they might be about to turn it around in their game against Alverca. They went 1-0 up. Sadly, it wasn't to last. Alverca, to their credit, came back, won the game 3-1. And in fairness, a very strong performance. Alverca, a team we spoke about last week, as maybe one to start taking a little bit more seriously. And I think this will only kind of add to that argument.
Definitely. I mean, after this win, they sit 10th in the table, which is very impressive for a team that we ridiculed at the beginning of the season because of all the transfers in, and we knew it was going to take a while for them to sort of gel and to get the identity of the team into all the players. But at the moment, like I said, they sit 10th, 10 points. They're above teams like Arouca, Riuave, Santa Clara, Casapia. I mean, that's no small feat, and it's not like it's a fluke or anything like that. They've played some good football. They've had some big results. I think in that midfield is really the key in this team. I think you have a player like Lincoln who's so good. He really dictates that midfield. Amorim has been very good as well. He scored in this game, and it was a pretty good goal. I mean, it's a bit of a deflection, and it looked very, impressive. A good goal from him. But yeah, I think the midfield is really the key in this team. But they're well organized. They were caught out on the early goal. I mean, you let Avias score against you. Jeez, come on. But I think it's one of those things where you always kind of knew they were going to get back into the game because of how good they are, and they seem to never stop trying. And they know what they're meant to do. The way the midfield moves, the runs that the forwards make into space is very consistent. And I think we could see even more from the Salvatica team as it goes on because, like I said, it's still early on. It's not the greatest team on paper, but they are playing some really good football with this limited squad. And I say limited, they brought a bunch of players in, but in terms of quality, they have what they have. RVS, I mean, I can try and sort of analyze it a bit more. They're
Bad
struggling. They could they continue to struggle. They're looking for goals in this game, and they bring on someone like Kgomela Kodisang, the South African who played for Riuave. We've seen him here in the league at Moreirense, and he's not really like a player like that. But they don't have anyone else, and that's what goes back to what we were talking about last week. Their squad is so weak. And you expect them to do something in January if they want to stay up. Good win for Alverca, more doom and gloom for RVS.
Really, well, I was going to say sad situation, but it is what it is. It can't be helped at the moment.
It's football.
Exactly that. It's a meritocracy at the end of the day. It's how it works. But a team, a different team that we've kind of spoke about with again with their own issues, who perhaps haven't set the league alight in Rio Ave, had quite an eye-catching result this weekend. They beat Tondela 3-0. Definitely a more kind of positive performance from their sense, definitely a more positive result from their sense. A goal and assist for Andre Luiz, who's kind of making himself the star man, I think, of that team. And then a goal apiece for Clayton and Spurkic, I believe. So, yeah, a much needed result, Kevin. Obviously, Tondela have their own issues and are not the strongest team at the moment. But very, very positive from a perspective because they need, for me, they need big results like this. They need big performances like this, and they need to keep improving because it's been very below par.
Yeah, it looks like you have come good at the right time, at least to prove us wrong, because we did have some critical words quite recently, just very confused about their sort of identity. And I don't think that this win, despite being 3-0 against, if Khiwav were going to have any sort of difficulties staying up against one of their direct rivals. So on paper, you would see that this was a real statement of intent and a very positive win. And they did have a very good performance, but I'm left thinking a lot of the same things just in terms of their identity, because it looks like it's very much a two-man show or three-man show a lot of the time. And it
That's
doesn't really
fair.
help when André Luiz played out of his skin. It's not just the contributions to goal, but the overall performance. He had a very good number of chances that he created. It looked very difficult to get the ball off of him. It just brilliant because everything seems to flow through him in that side. I think the winger on the other side, I can't remember his name. Let me. Spikic. He got a goal. Didn't really have too much left to do. It's everything flows down that side of Hussai and Andre Luiz. And maybe Clayton gets involved every now and again. But it looks like ball to Andre Luiz. He gives it to Clayton. Clayton scored. In this game, Andre Luiz actually had more goal contributions. Clayton did the most Clayton thing ever, which was score a goal, get themselves off. That's
Again, I have to say,
that is Clayton.
very frustrating for my fantasy football points total, but listen, I'm not gonna dwell
It's frustrating for everyone. I don't think anyone who
on
did that fantasy league, if you don't have Clayton, you're wrong. This doesn't justify me, but yeah, what are you doing in that case?
Also, Andre Luiz took a goal
Yeah.
off his foot, by the way. Let me just say that. But again, like I said, I'm not dwelling on
Yeah, you don't seem salty about it or anything.
it.
Yeah, so this is the thing. It's we left saying a lot of the same things despite the scoreline finally not being a draw for that team.
True.
That's the first thing. But Mishta was good once again. Panzers come back in, and they did have a little bit of a phase where they looked to be experimenting with some new pieces in their side. Some familiar games names have come in. The squad looks a little bit more settled in terms of the starting 11. And perhaps that's paying off a little bit more. But once again, you're stuck is mentioning a lot of the same names. The performance overall wasn't necessarily setting the world alight. And it brings us on to Tondela because I think their second half was actually quite positive. Created some very decent chances that they could have made the most of. I think we're stuck saying a lot of the same things about Tondela. We don't want to be worried about them because they've played some very impressive football in spurts. They threatened Benfica quite a few times. They could have really got a goal. They really should have gotten a goal in that game. But at what point does it stop being luck when you're 8 games in, you've only scored 4 goals, and I haven't looked to the XG table, but it's definitely going to be a lot kinder to them in terms of what they should have, in terms of what they do have. And that defense is something special at times. It looks like they have a real suicidal tendency just to commit some very poor errors and really give the ball away in some poor areas and seed some pressure. When if that wasn't there, I could see Tondela having a lot more of the ball, perhaps pushing that share up to about 60%, and perhaps having a few more chances, playing with a little more confidence, and that would get them some more positive results. This sort of dynamic, the players are going to lose confidence going forward very, very quickly. And at that point, you've got a lot of issues. As much as it does look promising, Tondela have to start picking up the points and getting the goals because the good signs, they don't keep you in the league. They don't. You get back to the dressing room, you're not thinking like, oh, but we played well. It's just not sustainable, unfortunately. As much as I haven't had a bad experience watching them so far this season. It's worrying, not because of what they play, but just what drives the business, which is the results. I don't think that defense can continue leaking goals at the rate that they do if the attack doesn't start producing, and they're lacking that cutting edge at the moment. So it's going to be very interesting to watch both teams, just because perhaps whoever start growing a little bit of confidence, a little bit of more familiarity, because the side does look a little bit more settled, even if they are dependent on a couple of extreme individualities, so not every team has at this level. And Tondela, we'll see what the next game brings, but the pattern seems to be play well, create chances, don't score, make bad errors, concede a couple of goals, and move on to the next one.
And there's often a team or two in this league who we admire for what they're trying to do, but can't quite get the results to match, and it doesn't often end well. I even think back to teams like Vizela in recent years and stuff like that who had the same thing. So I hope for Tondela's
That's
sake,
the
it's
Linz
not
team.
well exactly that. So I hope very much for their sake they're not that example this season. Rio Ave might not be the draw specialist anymore, Andrew, but I think we've got a new draw specialist in town. Famalicão, you're last on the running order once again. If you don't want to be last, stop drawing. But they drew again, 1-1 away at Arouca. Not the worst result. I think both teams had decent chances, but Famalicão, for me, dominated. Only one win in the last five games for both of these teams now, though. So it's not, while we can say, there's positives equally, that both of these teams, I think, will want to do slightly better than what they're doing right now.
Definitely, and that's three draws on the trot for Maligão. And in this game, they were definitely the better team. They created the better chances, and they're kind of in a rut at the moment where they seem to play well, but they're not able to really put their chances away, or they seem dominant, but they don't seem clinical. And there's just something that's a bit off at the moment with the Maligão. They're still obviously that very strong start to the season has helped them, and they're well placed in the standings. But definitely something to think about because you don't want to be drawing too many more games. Whereas Arouca on the flip side of that, they have had a few games where they maybe haven't played that well, but they've got decent results. I think about the Nacional game where Nacional were the better team, and Arouca were able to get that result. And that is something you can do when you have a smart manager who can organize you in a way like Arouca do with Vasco Seabra. They're well organized and they know how to stay in the game and then kind of find a way back. In this game, you're looking at Trezor, who started the season well, scored a couple good goals, and I think he's going to be a guy we're going to continue to talk about throughout the season because he does pop up with the goals and that bit of quality. And then on the other side of that, one of the very important players for Famalicão this season, and has been for a few seasons, Justin de Haas, scores the goal. He's such a solid player in that defense. And then you've got Gustave Sarr, who maybe didn't have his best game, but he's still Gustave Sarr. He's still the guy that stands out. He's the guy that connects everything. And I think when he's not really playing at his best, you see the impact on the team. But again, I don't think it's a result that Arouca would be too upset about. Famalicão might be, and I think Hugo Oliveira needs to sort of look at what he's doing, if he's focusing too much on the structure in the attack. Maybe he needs to give his players a bit more freedom in the attacking areas. But it could also just be a good old-fashioned personnel thing where players are getting a bit tired, or I think Elizondo in this game was he had a couple good chances, but he just wasn't clinical enough. And maybe you need your striker to be more clinical in these kind of games where it is going to be a bit tougher and you're playing against a well-organized team. That's going to make it hard for you all the way through.
Definitely. And I don't want to come across harsh by saying perhaps, Famalicão are underperforming. But for me, one win in five, three draws in a row, this is a good team full of great players. I have high hopes for them. And I think, they should be, if Gil Vicente and Morenense can be where they are, then a team with Famalicão's players could be there as well. And, not, like I said, no disasters, of course. They're just a little bit underperforming for me, and they should aim higher. But I have said that quite a few times on this podcast over the years about Famalicão, but there we are. All right, gents, well, that brings us to the end of this week's action. Once again, a big thank you to my co-hosts Andrew and Kevin for joining me. You can find links to all their work in the description of this podcast, as well as a link to our podcast Patreon page if you want to check out that and see how you can support the show even more. But I think that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.